Okay, I'm going to start with questions. First one's real easy. What did we speak about this morning? Purushavatar. What did we speak about regarding the Purushavatars? Ekangsenas tato jagat. What else did we speak about this morning? Yes. Vibhutis. And what was the connection between vibhutis and the Purusha avatars? Or Purusha Sukta. Anyone like to answer that question?
Lord has given vibhuti to every source which has to use the universe. Therefore, Lord is the proprietor.
Yeah. It's Purusha, that the Paramatma is the controller of the material energy, and from him comes these vibhutis. And he is but a partial expansion of the original personality of Godhead. So from him come the vibhutis, and the vibhutis belong to him. And recognizing that, one can be perfectly Krishna conscious. That's the connection. Anything else? Say it again. Opulences come from the Lord. That's the same thing he said. What's the distinction?
Okay.
Is there a distinction, what he's saying, what you said? Sounds like the same thing to me. Say it again. Okay, we have a responsibility to use things properly. Okay. Yes. Yes. Of course, that you know is mentioned also. Good. Good. Okay. What's the relationship between... We heard this morning that the Purusha Sukta prayers, they're glorifying the Purusha avatars, but it's specifically glorifying the Virat Rupa, or the universal form. So what's the relationship between Virat Rupa, or universal form, and the Purusha avatars? I'll tell you, and expand that question. Tell me what you know about the universal form. Describe things, because this evening we're focusing on the universal form. Okay, and? Okay, very good. Okay, now the first part of what you said, say it again slowly and clearly.
This universal form of the Lord, this is relevant only for understanding in this material world. It's not present in the spiritual world.
So, question. Are the Purusha avatars present in the spiritual world? Karna Dakshay Vishnu, Garbha Dakshay Vishnu, Shira Dakshay Vishnu. Are they present in the spiritual world? You're not sure. The answer is no. They're also specifically relevant to a material creation. So what's the difference between universal form and the Purusha avatars who are also specifically relevant to the purpose of material creation. Would you, do you like to address that one? Yeah. Okay, each of them has a specific purpose. And what's the specific purpose of the universal form in relation to the purpose of the three? Good point. But you said it also earlier. From this universal form, all varieties of beings come into existence. You described that. And that's a very important understanding. This verse is going to expand on that. Anything else? This is... The universal form isn't an easy topic. Because we generally just like, okay, skip right over that one, go on to something that we can understand, because we can't understand that one so well. Well, what I'm going to do this evening is I'll read what Prabhupada has written verbatim through the purport, the verse and the purport, and listen carefully, and then we'll go back over it and scratch our head and say, what did Prabhupada just tell us? What happened? What was all that about? So, text one. We're going to cover text 1 through 5 from chapter 6. Chapter 6 is titled Purusha Sukta Confirmed, same as what we read this morning. Purusha Sukta Confirmed. This is Lord Brahma speaking. Prior to this, Lord Brahma is being asked by Narada, "Are you not the Supreme? I thought, you're it. You're the creator. And who's more than the creator? But I see you're meditating. And upon whom are you meditating? And why do you have to meditate? Because you're it. Aren't you? Is there somebody more than you?" In the commentary, Prabhupada and our acharyas explain, this is Narada's uncertainty is something like Arjuna's uncertainty. He's qualified to know. He's taking the position of one who does not know. And so Brahma is answering, "No, I'm not supreme. There's the Supreme Personality of Godhead." And he describes the process of creation. So here he's describing the universal form in that process of creation. Lord Brahma said, "The mouth of the Virat Purusha, or the universal form of the Lord, is the generating sense of the voice. And the controlling deity is fire. His skin and six other layers are generating centers of the Vedic hymns. And his tongue is the productive center of different foodstuffs and delicacies for offering to the demigods, forefathers, and general mass of people." Purport. Page and a half purport. Listen carefully. "The opulences of the universal form of the Lord are described herein. It is said that his mouth is the generating center for all kinds of voices. Voices of crying babies. Voices of howling jackals. Voices of mosquitoes. Voices of whatever voices there are. Birds, singing birds. All voices." So this tells us something. from what we heard from verse 6. What did we hear from verse 6 about opulences? You said it earlier. Where do opulences come from? They come from the opulent. So where do voices come from? They come from the generating source of all voices. So how are voices to be used? In service to Krishna. That's where all of this is going. This is the whole purport. This is, comes from there, and that comes from another place, another thing comes to another place. The Virat Rupa is the generating source of so many things. So how should those so many things be seen? Seen in terms of their source. And if you see things in terms of their source, then you use them in terms of their source, devotional service. That's how a devotee sees the universal form. Non-devotees is another thing. But that's how a devotee sees the universal form. And his skin. Universal form has skin. Probably not like this, but he has skin. In fact, all skin. Snake skin, deer skin, bear skin, insect skin, skin. All skin. His skin and other six layers of bodily construction are the representative generating centers of the seven kinds of Vedic hymns, like the Gayatri. Gayatri is the beginning of all Vedic mantras, and it is explained in the first volume of Srimad Bhagavatam. Since the generating centers are the different parts of the universal form of the Lord. I'm going to read this sentence twice. He has, because of this, and because of this, and because of this, therefore that. So listen to the logic. Since the generating centers are the different parts of the universal form of the Lord, and since the form of the Lord is transcendental to the material creation, it is to be understood that the voice, the tongue, the skin, etc., suggest that the Lord, in his transcendental form, is not without them. Meaning, well, because he's the generating source, he has them. It's not the generating source is impersonal. Out of nothing comes something. Out of something comes something. As below, so above. Or as above, so below. Like, just listening to Prabhupada describe Krishna has anger. It's not like our anger. Our anger comes after frustration. But Krishna has anger. So where does anger come from? It comes from Krishna. But our anger is distorted and polluted by the modes of nature. But anger exists with Krishna. He becomes angry when Prahlad Maharaj is harassed by Hiranyakashipu. He becomes angry. But his anger is quickly subsided by Prahlad Maharaj. It's not anger that he loses, he can't control himself. Not that kind of anger. So everything comes from the Supreme Lord. And things of this world have their... There's a function of the universal form. And that is, he brings things into being. He brings voices into being. He brings skin into being. He brings things into being. Since the generating senses... I'll read it again. Since the generating centers are the different parts of the universal form of the Lord, and since the form of the Lord is transcendental to the material creation, it is to be understood that the voice, the tongue, the skin, etc., suggest that the Lord in his transcendental form is not without them. Doesn't mean that he has skin like ours or voice like ours, but he has transcendental, these things. The material voice, or the energy of taking in foodstuff, is generated originally from the Lord. Such actions are but perverted reflections of the original reservoirs. The transcendental situation is not without spiritual variegatedness. In the spiritual world, all the perverted forms of material variegatedness are fully represented in their original spiritual identity. The only difference is that material activities are contaminated by the three modes of material nature, whereas the potencies of the spiritual world are all pure because they are engaged in the unalloyed transcendental service of the Lord. In the spiritual world, the Lord is the sublime enjoyer of everything, and the living entities there are all engaged in his transcendental loving service without any contamination of the modes of material nature. The activities of the spiritual world are without any of the inebrieties of the material world. But there is no question of impersonal voidness on the spiritual platform, as suggested by the impersonalists. So this is it's logic by inference. It's the reverse. Because the Lord is the generating source, and because he is transcendental, then these things exist in him, and these things exist in him transcendentally, not materially. And the things that are created exist materially as replicas or representatives of the transcendental situation. But he's not impersonal, nor are these things false. They're temporary. They're reflections of the real thing, but the reflection of the real thing isn't a non-entity. It's a reflection. Like you're driving in your car, and you look in the mirror, and it's nighttime, and you see the reflection of the car behind you in the mirror. You can't say the car doesn't exist, because it's just a reflection. That wouldn't be a safe way to drive. It's a reflection. It's not that the car is in the mirror, but the reflection of the car is in the mirror. It tells you the car is there. The car exists, the reflection exists, but the reflection is not the car. Devotional service is defined in the Narada Pancharatra as follows. Question, quiz question. Who knows the verse? Narada Pancharatra, the definition of devotional service. That's nectar of devotion. Narada Pancharatra, definition. Say it again. That's nectar of devotion also, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. This is Narada Pancharatra, definition of devotional service. That verse that you're quoting says, without reference to authorized scriptures, that which claims to present truth is disturbance. Or, when speaking about spiritual subject matters, one should make reference to authorized sources. Yeah, what's the first part? Sarvopadi vinir muktam tatparatvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktir uchate. Prabhupada doesn't translate it, but he explains. Originally, since all the senses are produced of the Lord's reservoir of senses, the sense activities of the material world are to be purified by the process of devotional service. And thus the perfection of life can be attained simply by purifying the present position of our material activities. It's very similar to what we read in text 6 about opulences. Opulences are to be recognized as from the opulent, the supreme source of those opulences. And engaging in our activities with those opulences in service to the opulent, supreme source, leads to perfection of life. So here it's very similar, but not identical. This is in relation to upadhis, or senses. Here is specifically the bodies that we receive, the set of senses that we receive, the way that we have of perceiving things, and also of working. They're all produced from the Lord. There's where the similarity lies. Opulences are produced from the Lord. Senses are produced from the Lord. Since they're produced from the Lord, they're in their purified state, they're used in service to the Lord. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. In that way, one can be purified, and the stage of perfection can be achieved that way through devotional service. And the purifying process begins from the stage of being liberated from the conception of different designations. What does that mean? The conception of different designations. What does that mean? Who would like to say with it? What does that mean? We're not the body, but eternal servants of Krishna. So that's the real identity. Now what about the bodies that we have? What are they? It's not who we are, but what are they? In terms of this it's not difficult. Okay. There's the spiritual world where the Lord has spiritual form, and he's wanting the living entities to have an opportunity to fulfill their desire for independent enjoyment. So he makes an arrangement through the expansion of the Purusha avatars, who manifest this Virat Rupa, and they generate senses, which is what bodies are made up of. So this designations is the bodies that we're made up of. You know, I'm tall, or I'm skinny, or I'm a man, or I'm a woman, or I'm this, or I'm that, or I'm a dog, I'm a cat, I'm a fish, I'm a bird, I'm a human, I'm an American. Whatever, those are all upadhis, they're designations. They're describing the senses that come from the Supreme. So we need to know that we're spirit soul servants of Krishna, but we also need to know what this is. And according to the sentence we just read, the process of devotional service, that's the purifying means, begins by eliminating, becoming liberated from the conception of different designations. So we have to, as devotees, we have to play this dual role. We're in this world, and so we have to, you know, have to function. I've been in and out of India 3 times now since I've come to India, and every time I have to tell them who I'm not. When they ask who you are. What's your passport number? What's your date of birth? What's your color of eyes? Your height? You know, all these things that I'm not. So I'm, you know, performing. I don't say, I'm spirit, soul, eternal part of Krishna. Na, 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 na. You know, that won't get in the country. So And we have our, so we have our practical lives to live. While we're living our practical lives, we should be recognizing this is this upadhi program, having to do with the bodies that we've received. You know, what's your profession? What do you do with your senses? That's who you are. And now, what do you do with them? Oh, I'm a this profession, that profession. And that's okay. That's your identity. Thank you. That's not our identity. But how can we move about in a world that thinks that's our identity? We use the senses in the service to Krishna. Consciously. I'll read it again. The purifying process begins from the stage of being liberated from the conception of different designations. Every living entity is engaged in some sort of service, either for the self, or for the family, or for the society, country, etc. But unfortunately, all such services are rendered due to material attachment. The attachments of the material affinity may be simply changed to the service of the Lord. Like you're engaged in civil service. You don't have to be a devotee, stop your civil service, or someone's a teacher, or someone's a student, or someone's a housewife, or someone's a this and a that. You don't have to, it's not that one has to give up those engagements, but one doesn't engage in those engagements thinking that's who I am. These set of senses and this intelligence and this faculty, this capacity that Krishna has given me, it's Krishna's. And it's meant for serving him. And if one doesn't have that sense of service unto Krishna, then we'll be attached to those things and I will identify with those things. And something goes wrong with those things and we're in big distress. Something goes right with those things, we think we're very happy. We become more attached. The attachments of the material affinities may be simply changed to the service of the Lord, and thus the treatment of being freed from material attachment begins automatically. The process of liberation is therefore easier through devotional service than by any other methods, for in Bhagavad Gita 12:5, what's chapter 12? And text 5, Krishna is answering that first question, which do you consider to be better, worshipping your personal form or worshipping the impersonal feature of you? Text 5 is the impersonal feature. He's klesho dikataraste-sham avyakta sakta cetasam. It's very difficult. All varieties of tribulations are experienced if one is impersonally attached. So three times in the purport, Prabhupada is addressing that the universal form is not intended to get us beyond form to the formless, that the Supreme is formless, and we should go beyond form to formless. Three times in different ways. Specifically in this last way, it's reference to Bhagavad Gita. That path of worshipping the unmanifest, impersonal feature is troublesome. It's simply troublesome. And the process of liberation from the false designations or material designations or upadis is best accomplished by the process of devotional service, which says, okay, we have these senses. They're generated from the generating centers of all senses. and therefore they're to be used in the service of that transcendent Lord. His senses are transcendental, our senses are contaminated only because of material identification, seeing them as separate. But if they're again connected through the medium of service, they become spiritualized also. Even the senses can become spiritualized by the process of devotional service. Very early, Prabhupada used to use this example, like over and over again, the example of a gold box and a gold-plated box. The gold box is like the spiritual body, and the gold-plated box is like this material body that's engaged in devotional service. It's not a gold box, but it looks like gold and it acts like gold, although it's not fully gold. So the body that's used in devotional service, it can act in a spiritual way. It can act fully spiritually by the medium of the internal potency. Just like a copper wire can carry electricity, it conducts electricity. Copper wire isn't electric, but when connected with a powerhouse, it carries electricity. Gaur Gopal, Hari Bol. So that's how devotional service is being presented in terms of the universal form. Now I'm going to read the next four verses, and they'll go right over your head, but that's okay. The same principle applies. The explanation is things come from generating sensors within the universal form. And when we have those things given to us in our particular life form, we're to use them in service to the source from which they came, unto Krishna. Okay. Text 2 through 5. His two nostrils are the generating centers of our breathing and of all other airs. His smelling powers generate the Ashvini Kumara demigods and all kinds of medicinal herbs. And his breathing energies produce different kinds of fragrance. His eyes are the generating centers of all kinds of forms, and they glitter and illuminate. His eyeballs are like the sun and the heavenly planets. His ears hear from all sides and are receptacles for all the Vedas, and his sense of hearing is the generating center of the sky and all kinds of sound. Purport. In the verse, the word Tirthanam is mentioned. Tirthanam sometimes is interpreted to mean places of pilgrimage, tirthas. But Srila Jiva Goswami says that it means the reception of Vedic transcendental knowledge. The propounders of Vedic knowledge are also known as the tirthas. Text 4. His bodily surface is the breeding ground for all active principles of everything and for all kinds of auspicious opportunities. His skin, like the moving air, is the generating center for all kinds of sense of touch and is the place for performing all kinds of sacrifice. Purport. The air is the moving agent of all the planets, and as such, the generating centers for promotion to the deserving planets, the sacrifices, are his bodily surface and are naturally the origin of all auspicious opportunities. Text 5. The hairs on his body are the cause of all vegetation, particularly of those trees which are required as ingredients for sacrifice. The hairs on his head and face are reservoirs for the clouds. And his nails, check this out, his nails are the breeding ground of electricity. Stones and iron ore. Purport. The polished nails of the Lord generate electricity. No explanation. And the clouds rest on the hairs of his head. One can therefore collect all sorts of necessities of life from the person of the Lord, and therefore the Vedas affirm that everything that is produced is caused by the Lord. The Lord is the supreme cause of all causes. That ends text 5 of chapter 6, Purusha Sukta confirmed. No detailed explanation, and I'm not going to try to offer a detailed explanation. So don't ask. The important point has been made once again. Everything that is produced is caused by the Lord. So there's this relationship of the universal form. When we heard about the process of annihilation and creation again, we heard that there are these three different types of creation: Mahakalpa, Vikalpa, and Kalpa. Each Kalpa, each day of Brahma, part of the meditation of Brahma is that he is described in the Bhagavatam. He meditates upon the universal form, and he's not an impersonalist, he's a devotee. Impersonalists meditate on the universal form. It's like, you know, a child's playground for them. They can just imagine whatever they like out of that universal form, because it's, who's going to stop them? It's like too so difficult to understand. This means that, and that means another thing, and ultimately it's formless anyway, so. I've had direct experience with persons that are impersonalists, and their meditation is meditation upon the universal form, and they explain themselves explicitly that way. Beyond the form is formless. See this form, beyond the form is formless. This is a form for meditation for neophytes, and beyond the form is formless. They're like, you know, it's like a broken record. That's their program. And Virat Rupa is repeated multiple times in the Bhagavatam. It's in Bhagavad Gita, a whole chapter is dedicated, and in the Bhagavatam several times. So it's an important subject, although it's admittedly very difficult, very subtle and difficult to understand. As the whole created realm, how does something material come from something spiritual? It's not easy to understand. No, immediately or apparently. And so the impersonalist deals with it one way, and the materialist deals with it another way, and the atheist deals with it another way, and all kinds of spiritual religious groups deal with it some other way. So the Bhagavat teaching, of course, is Chintya Bhed Abhed Tattva. It's a tattva, it's truth. This form, this Virat Rupa, is a form that exists, and yet it's temporary. as the material creation is temporary. It's temporary. But at the same time, it's a form of the Lord, and we've been hearing it's transcendental. Although it's the form of the universe, which is temporary. So it's elusive. Try to grab a hold of it, and it's, what happened? It's gone. From this universal form, the Lord generates things, senses and opulences and objects of the sense. And whatever there is, it's from the Lord. That's the important part. And because the Lord generates so many things, there's so many things that are useful for the living being, for their well-being. So it's in that, for their well-being is attended in service to Krishna. So whether it's electricity or iron ore or minerals, it's meant for service to Krishna. From a Vaishnava perspective, from a Bhagavat perspective. That's the important thing out of all of this. When you study Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, in Chapter 1, the whole of Chapter 1 is First Step in God Realization. That's the title of the chapter. And it's all about the universal form. Now here it is again in Chapter 6, all about the universal form. There's something about the universal form that's important, or the form of the universe, the Lord's form of the universe. It's important to understand this universal form is not just, you know, what we visibly see. There's some mountains over there, and there's some roads over here, and there's some trees over here, and we're to see those in relation to the Virat Rup, but it's not the Virat Rup. Should I say it again? Those hills over there and over here. We're to see those hills and the trees. So the hills are his stacks of bones, and the trees are the hairs on his body, and so on. The clouds in the sky are his hair, and the rivers are his veins, and so on. We're seeing those things that we can physically see with our eyes in relation to the universal form, but the universal form is transcendental. These things are from that thing. They're from the universal form, which is the generating, has generators, generating centers for all things, all voices, etc., etc., etc. And that form is transcendental. Although it's, as you were appropriately saying, it's for the purpose of material creation only. That is, there is no Virat Rupa in Vaikuntha. There's no material creation in Vaikuntha. So there's no Virat Rupa in Vaikuntha. So it's not an eternal form of the Lord, but it's a temporary form of the Lord for the purpose of creation. So our worship is not worship of the Virat Rup. Our worship is Tribhangalalitam Shamasundar, who's some remote expansion of him is this universal form, for the purpose of providing things for living entities who have a rebellious spirit to try to become the enjoyer of those opulences, but actually to give them an opportunity to really do the right thing, to render service to the Lord. and that the study of Srimad Bhagavatam is to help us come to that position. Okay, now that your all doubts are removed and only clarity remains, any comments or questions? Yes. Yeah.
How do you understand the differences? Why those differences are?
The functions are different. That's one thing. The function. When Arjuna is shown the universal form on the Kurukshetra battlefield, it's the all-devouring, destroying feature. And when Shukadeva Goswami is describing the universal form in the first chapter of second canto, Bhagavatam, the function is different. It's forming a personal conception of God when there's no conception of God. So in terms of that which we can tangibly perceive, see those things in terms of a personal conception. It's to help the neophyte form a personal conception. The same terminology, Virat Rupa, or universal form, is applied in both cases. I've not heard carefully spelled out comparison by our acharyas, nor have I been in a discussion with senior Vaishnavas on this topic where I found has scriptural basis and really makes a lot of sense. But the functions are different. What you said, the premise of your question is accurate, and the functions are different. Specifically also the universal form that's described in the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is the totality of everything in existence in one place at one time. In other words, that the feature is totally overwhelming. I mean, even to think about everything that exists in all time and in all space in one place at one time. It's just, the thought is overwhelming. You can't think the thought. To experience that was overwhelming for Arjuna. And he describes what he saw and is, take this thing away. So, a second function that Prabhupada would refer to on a regular basis was, in the future, Arjuna understood persons would claim that they are God, and so he wanted to show, if that happens, you ask the person, can you show your universal form? And if they cannot, then we reject your, it was to help establish or to further establish Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, distinct from anyone else who might make such a claim. And again, the function in the first canto, first chapter, second canto, is different. You said we should be satisfied with whatever Krishna gives, even bad health or in difficulties. It is inspiring when we hear, but when we're put in such a situation, how to apply this principle? What practical steps? Well, Krishna puts us in situations. Something that Prabhupada taught is that this, both Krishna and the spiritual master will never give instructions that you cannot accomplish. Or another way of saying the same thing is Krishna will not put you in a situation that you cannot remain Krishna conscious. Krishna's purpose is not to break our spirit, but to strengthen our spirit. So for certain one should know that whatever the situation Krishna places me in, there's a means of becoming or maintaining my Krishna consciousness. Generally, those challenges that we're put in, they happen incrementally. They don't happen like all at once this whole avalanche of things come landing on your head. But little by little by little, something, then another something, and then another something. So one gains experience and also strength by, as each thing comes your way, recognizing this is coming from Krishna, because where else is it coming from? And Krishna is giving me an opportunity to serve him. And it's not that applies when things are nice. It's also when things are difficult. Krishna is giving me an opportunity to serve him. So what your question is, what steps to take? I say step at a time. Each situation that arises, face it in that way. And Krishna won't put you in a challenge that is more than you can handle. Trust that. I specifically mentioned the chronic health thing because I know of people that have chronic health things. And it's one thing to have a health problem that then goes away. It's another thing to have a health problem that doesn't go away. It's either a pain that doesn't go away or just something that you were accustomed to doing, you just can't do anymore because you don't have the health capacity to do it. But you want to do it, but you can't do it. Just strength isn't there, or the capacity isn't there. It's not wise even to try to do it. It aggravates the situation. And then the person has to come to terms with, that's the position from which Krishna wants me to serve. So that the acceptance of Krishna's arrangement, making whatever practical things one can do in life to at least stabilize the situation, then it's just that becomes your service. That's the service that Krishna has given. I have god brothers that are doing the same service that I'm doing, except their health is so broken. I mean, it's incredible the difficulty that they're going through. This thing and that thing and this thing and that thing, and they spend their whole time just dealing with their health. And I'm thinking, Krishna's really putting it to them. But they're so Krishna conscious, they're handling it. And if you look at a situation like that and say, why does Krishna, they're so Krishna conscious, Krishna could be engaging them in so many beneficial ways to benefit so many souls. But Krishna has his plan, and we can't second guess Krishna's plan. So they're giving their challenge is greater than some other people's challenge because they have the capacity to handle it, and they're left just dependent upon Krishna. You certainly have more time for hearing and chanting than some of the rest of us. But they would rather be engaging in service plus hearing and chanting, and they can't. Krishna has his way of giving us an opportunity to serve him in a position where we're dependent upon him. And however he wants to do that is, it's his prerogative. That's what it means to be someone's servant. So be accepting of the position of Krishna as the master, and we're the servant. Okay. Why is it more difficult to give up subtle sense gratification than gross sense gratification? Well, the answer is because it's more subtle. You know, something that's more gross, it's easier to get a handle on. It's easier to like move your arm from this place to that place than it is to move the mind. The mind is that entity that carries conceptions of life. So we were reading that the beginning of devotional service is liberation from the position of false designation. And those conceptions are carried in the mind. The conceptions of life are carried in the mind. The purifying process begins from the stage of being liberated from the conception of different designations. So, you know, I can do a behavior or refrain from a behavior, but still carrying a conception of myself, a misconception. It's easy. People do it all the time. Like, let's say, someone has the idea of engaging in selfless work. But that idea of selfless work is filled with egotism. It's all about themselves doing selfless work. So the senses are engaged one way, and the subtle body is engaged in another way. Very self-centered. Although the activity is, it appears selfless. So the resting place of desire and the resting place of conceptions is in the mind. It's elusive. Very tricky. Anything else? Yes. Microphone. There's a sentence in the purport that says
the purification starts only when one is free from these designations.
Yeah.
But now this bodily designation is so deep, and still we practice this chanting and hearing. So.
Well, you spoke it differently than it's written, and the way that it's written is the purifying process begins from the stage of being liberated from the conception of different designations. You put in an adverb in there. Only when. So. It's not like the process of devotional service is not like a cubicle or a bucket. You're in the material bucket or you're in the devotional service bucket. And it's either here or there. You know, it's the on or off, one or a zero. It's a different position, certainly, but there's degrees. So there's degrees of becoming free from material designations. It starts with the conceptual one. Then there's the working on it. Trying to act in that consciousness, gradually trying to realize that truth, and gradually becoming free from the strong hold that material designations have upon us. So it's not a bucket, it's a gradual. It begins from working on it, or, you know, hearing it and understanding it, receiving it, accepting it, and cultivating it. You could say it begins from association, from one association of one who has such a beyond upadhi conception of life. And it could be one of us who are in this mixed, not yet fully here, not still fully there stage. And we speak to someone about the spirit soul being free. And that's our natural position. So through that association, one can also begin by having the conception. Yes. So speaking about what?
Chronic health problems.
Yeah, chronic health. You have a chronic health problem? Okay.
In those cases, even if a person desires strongly that I want to serve, still the even a desire is strong, health problem persists. So
Their service can be taking care of their health problem. Do you know people like that? I know some people like that. That's their service.
Service is at Krishna's terms, not I want to serve in this way, not like this. What Krishna wants, with that we have to look for that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking now of very active, very happy disciple of Bhakti Tirtha Swami, a black woman who was about 35. Very vibrant, very radiant, happy, always smiling, joyful person. She was diagnosed with cancer. And the whole community was shocked. You know, it was all this, why? She's such a nice devotee, and now she can't serve. But she served the devotees in an amazing way. They came to help her because she was so like this magnetic personality. And they came to serve her day and night and night and day and day and night. And she just stayed on this transcendental platform, giving them transcendental inspiration. Just to be completely detached from the body. She was amazing. Wasn't, you know, she was a blissful personality, but wasn't like particularly recognized as a super transcendentalist. She became a super transcendentalist and inspired people like anything. She would encourage them in their chanting. Let's chant together. It wasn't like, you know, we'll come by your bed and chant. She said, let's chant together. Let's really immerse ourselves in the holy name. You know, she was inspiring everybody. She was serving from that position, although she couldn't lift her arm. She became so weak and skinny, you know, like this microphone stand. Persons weren't feeling sorry for her, they were feeling inspired by her. They came not just to spend time to comfort her, but they spent time to get spiritual vibrancy from her, to her last breath, she was serving like that. Her mind wasn't, you know, lamenting and complaining, whining, "Oh, Krishna, why are you doing this? I had so many plans to serve you, and now you took those plans away." And pain. Cancer is very painful. But the service carried her. Oh, that's an extreme case. But it's the principle. If Krishna has a plan for us to serve this way, we serve this way. Krishna has a plan for us to serve. And like the question came, you know, that's easy to say, but when the challenge comes, but the challenge comes to us all the time. We have an idea to serve this way and something changes. And then we have to be ready. And that's the test of our Krishna consciousness. Are you ready to serve as Krishna intends? If as soon as it becomes clear Krishna's intent, and as I'm speaking, I'm thinking of situations that I've been in, and others very dear to me have been in. And you know, it's all of a sudden it's going this way, and the next moment it's going in a different direction. And it's say yes to Krishna, not like, you know, complain about the person that made it started moving in a different direction. If that's what Krishna wants. We can address, you know, the people and the circumstances and so on, but you draw the line and that's what Krishna wants, then you do what Krishna wants. And be happy. There's some reason. Something. Our purification or some association or some surrender or something. Something. Whatever Krishna wants. That's our way of life. It's not ashram specific, it's not circumstance specific, it's what our life is about. In life in Krishna consciousness. If Krishna maintains things steadily over a period of time, certain, like, you know, this nice community, great. If somebody's circumstance suddenly does a, you know, like something happens, and it's not, it's by Krishna's arrangement, something happens, somebody's circumstance changes, then we accept it. Whatever that might be. And we continue to serve according to that indication of Krishna. Anything else?
Sometimes Krishna service is given by the Krishna master, and some impediments are there. Something because of improper consciousness, some difficulties come in between. So shall we pray for? Can we pray that service is given by Krishna master, impediment should be the difficulty should go.
Why? It depends on the difficulty. Do you have something in mind?
No, nothing specific, but further.
Here's how I look at when difficulties arise. Krishna's giving me some service. What's the best way to serve Krishna given this difficulty? If it means if Krishna's intention is the difficulty should be removed, then that's my service. And if it's how to best address the difficulty so that the difficulty subsides or becomes resolved, you know, it depends on the circumstance. But it's just, here's a service, here's an opportunity for service. May not be the one I was thinking about. It's not like, you know, I was planning, oh, this will be a great difficulty to come my way, let's hope that that comes. But it comes of its own accord. Now, what's the best way? In what way would Krishna be pleased? And what's the best way in a responsible manner to address this situation? so much, it's so much variegatedness in what's appropriate in time, place, and circumstance. But it's not that in all circumstances that the obstacle or difficulty should go away. And that's like the standard of devotional service. Okay. I guess we're all satisfied. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.